You've just tuned into Outdoor News Radio, a weekly showcase of the top outdoors writers and experts in Minnesota and across the region. I'm Outdoor News Managing Editor Rob Dreeslein, and I'm honored to have you join us for the next hour as we break down hunting, fishing, and natural resources topics affecting your ability to recreate in the Western Great Lakes and beyond. Our guests might challenge you occasionally, but we promise to entertain you while we're at it. Don't go away, because if you love this state's fine outdoor scene, you'll love Outdoor News Radio. This segment is sponsored by Ducks Unlimited. Join the thousands of volunteers having fun more than 3,500 times a year. Get involved at www.volunteerfordu.org. Howdy, everybody. Welcome to another week of Outdoor News Radio. Rob Dreeslein is happy to spend the next hour with you. We are going to also have Tim Lesmeister toward the end of the show. We're going to talk foraging a little bit, kind of an odd topic, but I've got a guest, a guy who's spending a year trying to just live off the land. His name's Robin Greenfield. He's going to join us for a segment. We will also have the first of a two-part interview with Ryan Callahan, new CEO and executive director of Backcountry Hunters and Anglers. Ryan found some time to chat with us. We're also going to have a quick chat in the print version of Outdoor News and OutdoorNews.com with Ryan, so stay tuned for that. Anyway, let's kick it off now, though, with Tim Spielman. Tim, welcome. Good to see you. And we talked a little bit off-air here. You say that it's kind of a black-and-white world out there, huh?
Yeah, if you get up to East Central Minnesota, I talked to someone from Hinckley not too long ago. We were sharing notes about a week and a half ago now, I suppose, but it's been cold, so nothing's really changed. But there was a lot of rain that stuck to tree limbs and oak leaves and things like that. And then it turned to snow, and it's just amazing how the especially in the pines too, it's amazing how many trees in this part of the state are bent over, snapped off. It's kind of made the late season deer hunting challenge. It's kind of a cool dichotomy that you've got something that it looks so serene and peaceful, but somewhere beneath all that snow is a lot of destruction.
Why don't we talk deer first, Tim? A couple good headlines out of Minnesota and Wisconsin. The deer kill up in Minnesota. Actually down, what, like a couple tenths of a percent, I think, in Wisconsin so far. But we are ahead of last year's pace here in Minnesota.
Yeah, there's a little bit of season to go, but I think as of the writing of that story a few days ago, we had surpassed 172,000, which was up about 1,000 from a year ago. And there's archery, and there was muzzleloader remaining. There's the late CWD hunt in some deer permit areas. So man, I don't know, might be getting close to that 180 by the end of the all the seasons, which it's up from the last couple of years. Again, it isn't quite inching up to where it was, say, 5-6 years ago.
Right.
Somewhere in there. But it's an improvement. Most people I've talked to are most areas of the state, of course, there are the places where they're still just not seeing too many deer in the north and northeast. But overall, it seemed like people were happy with what they saw when they were afield this year.
And we mentioned this last week, we don't have any hard CWD numbers yet. We've got a lot of suspects, which, again, we think are probably going to be positives. And it seemed like a little bit of pessimism there from Eric Hildebrand that it's probably going to be ahead of last year in terms of the number of positives we find.
Yeah, like you said, I don't think too many of the suspects end up being not positive. And right now, if it were just those samples and those suspects were positive, we'd be pretty close to last year. But as Eric, who is the DNR's wildlife health supervisor, said, this year at this time, and this was Tuesday, we're at 99 positives or suspected positives. And a year ago, at the same point in time, we're at 45 because there are still samples coming in or going out as well. So if you look at it that way, that would be a glass half empty for sure.
Mm-hmm.
like you said, you wait until January, mid-January, and you see how it all plays out, but we're definitely not going in the right direction. And as I think we mentioned a week ago, there was a new area this year where a hunter-harvested deer was found last year. It was submitted by someone voluntarily out by Wheaton, far western Minnesota. And
right.
And in that area where they created a surveillance zone this year, there's another suspect. So
they're guessing.
Yeah. So you really hope that something like that is isolated, but deep down, you know, it's probably not.
Yeah, you're hoping it's an outlier, and then you find another one. It's like, oh boy, here we go. Tim, did the targeted culling in the southeast, that's done this year. There's absolutely not happening this year. The DNR decided not to do that. Mm-hmm. But did they eliminate that last year too? Do you recall last winter, like last January, February? That's when they were doing it, weren't they?
This previous winter was the first year they did not do that.
Okay. The fact that they took their foot off the throat last year already would seem like that would contribute to more CWD positives down there already this fall.
Yeah, well, there's more deer in the landscape than there would have been if there was that targeted culling. So it only makes sense.
That culling last year would have presumably taken a few of them out.
Yeah, in the way it's been operated, they target those areas where the prevalence is greatest. So not only are there more deer in the landscape, but there are more deer in those areas where the most CWD has been found.
Yep. Outdoor News Radio, Rob Dreesline and Tim Spielman are kicking off this week's broadcast. We talked a lot of deer numbers here. We're probably going to keep doing that as the year winds down. But let's talk ice. That's what's new out there. And this cold snap we've got, building ice out there quickly. There's going to be a lot of ice fishing this weekend already.
Yeah. Check with your local bait shop. It's tough to write weather stories. It always has been. And when you're writing it on a Tuesday and you're asking these bait shop and resort folks, so how much ice are you going to have on Saturday? They right, just kind of, yeah. I'm sure they're rolling their eyes, and I say, I know, but I'm just trying to speculate a little bit. You want people to check ahead of time, and I'm sure they get lots of calls from ice anglers this time of year, people popping in. But the nice thing was on Tuesday, if you want to look at it that way, the nice thing was that there were some really cold, really low temperatures in the forecast. They were going to be making ice. There was between then and now, maybe a little bit of snow, but there wasn't much in the forecast. So they were telling me that in most places there would be walkable ice pretty much across the state, which is kind of cool. I thought that you had Lake of the Woods, you had Upper Red and the lakes around Bemidji, and they all had ice very comparable in thickness to clear down in little old Fairmont. So everybody, all the ice fishers in Minnesota from Iowa to the Canadian border are seeing kind of the same ice. Now it won't end up that way, but we're all in this together. We're all getting out at the same time. So that was good. I mean, it was good news, and it's maybe a little bit behind schedule. If you look at say 10, 20 years of data in terms of ice and when people get out on the ice. But if you look at just the last couple of years, folks are happy because the past two winters have been real brutal for ice fishing.
Yeah. Yeah, and the snow that we got, it sounds like it mostly hit before there was good ice, and it probably mm-hmm. didn't cause too much problems. Is that the general vibe out there, Tim?
Yep. Even in the south, there was that stretch they went through the previous weekend, but the big lakes didn't have ice covering them yet, so no damage done. On the other hand, someone from Fairmont, as I mentioned, said, yeah, but some of those small sloughs did, and they got snow on them, and as a pheasant hunter, I wasn't happy to hear that, but you know, you can't have perfect conditions all the time, but I wish they were closer to perfect.
Tim, before we go, last week, Les Meister and I had time to talk about the National Park Service raising rates on international visitors. He and I actually argued about it a little bit. He thought I was too hardcore. I was, as I wrote in my column, I'm supportive of this. He thought it was going to affect tourism, which, you know, there's a lot of evidence to suggest that the tariffs and other issues have caused U.S. tourism to already kind of be in the tank. I wouldn't want to be a casino owner in Las Vegas these days. But I'm curious what your take is. Do you support the Trump administration jacking up national park fees for international tourists?
Oh, that's a little bit out of my arena. But if I were to think about it, I would say that if someone was visiting the United States from Guam for a wedding, for example, and happened by Glacier Park, I would guess they would have the means to pay a little extra. I don't know. You think about states and their non-resident licenses. It's not out of the ordinary. I can't imagine it would affect people who are traveling this far and they've got Yellowstone Park in mind. I don't know what the rate was. You could probably tell me that. It seemed like it got jacked up or is going to a decent amount, but
right.
I don't think it was pricing anybody out who has the means to travel the United States. And oh, by the way, I think we'll visit some national parks.
I made that exact point to Lesmeister last week. You just brought up an interesting point about the non-resident license fees. I would argue those are far more disproportionate, for a non-resident from Minnesota to go hunt an elk in Montana than for someone from Japan to come and visit Yellowstone National Park. And most of that hunting is occurring on national forests, which are managed by all of our tax dollars. So I think that's far more egregious than what's been proposed here. So anyway.
Yeah, we'll find out. Do they track international tourists? I suppose you can find that out, huh?
See, count the buses. I don't know. Yeah, good question.
But the point was to raise funds. Well, according to the story we had, to raise funds for park upkeep and maintenance, right?
Which is desperately needed. Yeah, no doubt about it. Yeah. Mm-hmm. All right. Well, Tim, thanks for your 2 cents there and all your other comments, and have a good week ahead.
Yep, you too.
All right. Tim Spielman, editor at Outdoor News. Appreciate him joining us. Let's break. We'll be back, maybe talk foraging a little bit here when we return. This is Outdoor News Radio.
Get ready for the ice season. MinFish's annual World's Greatest Online Ice Fishing Auction, sponsored by Chora Warrior, runs November 26th through December 7th. To bid, go to mn-fish.com. That's mn-fish.com. Find gear from brands you trust, Clam, Ice Castle, Hummingbird, Garmin, and many others. Trips with top guides and vacation stays, too. Proceeds support MinFish, giving anglers a strong voice in St. Paul.
Calling all antique hunters, modern collectors, treasure seekers, and even that old guy on the couch with a smartphone. The Ducks Unlimited Vault Auction is live, and your chance to uncover your next legendary find is here. Whether it's a rare piece of DU history, a unique knife, an original work of art, or that one-of-a-kind firearm, this auction has over 1,000 unique treasures waiting for you. Start exploring now at www.intothevault.org. Bidding ends Saturday, December 7th. Don't underbid your most exciting relic to date.
Whether you're hunting private or public ground, Onyx Hunt gives you the edge. With detailed land ownership maps, you'll know exactly where you stand. Add in advanced weather, wind, and radar tools, and you've got the full picture to plan every hunt. Now, with Moultrie Mobile Trail Cam integration, you can even see photos from your cams right on the map for smarter scouting and better stand decisions. Download the Onyx Hunt app today and start your free 7-day trial.
The journey to deer camp only comes once a year, and we know you've got plenty of heavy, bulky gear to pack. Introducing the new Diverge case from Plano. Lightweight where it counts, tough when it matters. Ultra durable and lightweight thanks to a tough shell exterior with high density foam that delivers molded protection without the bulk. And a drop zone lid tray provides a convenient workstation for keys, cartridges, and coffee during pre-hunt prep. The new Diverge series cases from Plano. Don't just kinda be ready, be Plano ready.
Attention hunters, have you bagged an impressive whitetail buck this season? Then show it off at the Outdoor News Best Buck Contest, sponsored by Federal. The contest runs through January 2026. Bow, rifle, or muzzleloader, all hunters are welcome. Visit OutdoorNews.com for a shot at great prizes and bragging rights. Click the Best Buck Contest link atop the page at OutdoorNews.com to learn more, enter, and view official rules. That's OutdoorNews.com.
If you're hunting deer in Minnesota or surrounding states this season, be aware that deer carcass movement restrictions are in place in Minnesota. You cannot move whole intact carcasses out of CWD management zones or into Minnesota from other states, and only certain parts of your harvest can be transported. If you're heading to a licensed taxidermist from hunting out of state or in a CWD zone, there are regulations for you too. Visit mndnr.gov/deer imports to learn more. That's mndnr.gov/deer imports.
Everybody, welcome back to Outdoor News Radio. Rob Dreisland with you for another segment. Thanks so much for tuning in. Again, if you like the chatter here, check us out online at outdoornews.com or call us at 800-535-5191 to subscribe to print or digital versions. Outdoor News makes a great holiday gift. Hey, I wanted to take a little break here and get away from some of the hardcore hook and bullet content that we usually discuss here and have a chat with a young man who's running around the country right now. He describes himself as an extreme minimalist. His name is Robin Greenfield, originally from northern Wisconsin. That's where he's checking in with us now. And he's got an amazing project underway as we speak. He is trying to, and I think he's succeeding, only live off calories that he finds via foraging. He's literally living off the land for a year. Let's get Robin's take on that. Mr. Greenfield, thanks a lot for carving out some time to chat with us.
Yeah, it's good to be connected with you, Rob.
You got a great website. It's just robingreenfield.org. But tell us what you got going. This started October 9th. Is that right? And it's a year long quest to not basically eat any processed foods and forage off the land. Tell us about it.
Exactly. So for one entire year, I am foraging every bite of my food and medicine down to, you know, of course, you've got the fat, the protein, the calories, but also down to the medicine, down to the oil and fat, down to the salt, down to the every flavor. So literally nothing from the grocery store or a restaurant, and not even a garden. So nature is my garden for this year, just foraging, fishing, hunting, the abundance here in the Northwoods.
This is a lifestyle thing for you. It looked like in the past you'd done this for a month. I saw there was a picture of you where then for another month you lived like the average American and you took all the trash you accumulated and made an outfit out of it. And why is this important to you?
Well, we live in a time where we have become quite disconnected from the earth through our sort of extreme, you know, consumer convenience. And I really, really am excited and inspired to connect people to the fact that the way that we are living is causing a lot of destruction and harm to the earth, to the plants, to the animals, and to humanity. And so I want to show people that another way is possible through simple living, through sustainable living. And a big part of that for me includes foraging, harvesting from the land, growing food. And so indeed, in 2019, I embarked on a year of growing and foraging all my food. That included what I grew in gardens. In 2022, I did a month of foraging all my food, and now it's 1 year of foraging all my food. So it is another level of testing this connection and relationship to the earth.
And I want to point out, Robin's got a bunch of events here in Minnesota. He's swinging through the state next week. Again, you go to robingreenfield.org, click events, and you can see where he's going to be. You're going to be out in Chaska, not too far from where I live next weekend. Robin, maybe I'll get out there to see you.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, let's talk. So it started October 9th. So we're getting to be a couple months into it. You're looking good. You're looking healthy. You're surviving. You're doing okay, right?
Absolutely. So I gave myself just 3 months to prepare. So I started harvesting July 1st, and it was a casual summer of harvesting, but I put away a good amount of food, and I'm day 55 right now. I've lost maybe about 5 pounds, but what do you expect from giving up Ben & Jerry's ice cream and, you know, sure, all of that, even just, you know, the jars of peanut butter to be able to pack in the calories? So you expect that, and I hope that I've leveled off. I have lost a little muscle mass, which I'm surprised by because I eat a lot of fish and a lot of venison. But yeah, so far it's going well. And the ultimate sign that I know it's going well is most days I don't remember that I'm eating 100% food that I forage, which means I'm in a rhythm quite so, I would say. It's not survival, that's for sure.
And I want to emphasize that. Yeah, you're not a vegan guy. You are getting protein from a lot of the same food sources that a lot of my listeners do. You're hunting and you're fishing.
Yeah, actually, I was vegan from 2014 to 2016, and I did it because I truly thought at the time that it was the diet that was the most beneficial to the ecosystems. Ultimately, I realized I had watched some inaccurate documentaries, and there's, you know, hunting and fishing, there are many populations of animals that we can work with in a way where we meet our needs, in a way where we're not taking more than the ecosystem can provide. And so I'm very passionate about fishing, and I haven't actually hunted deer yet because I harvest deer that are hit by cars.
That's very interesting. I'm sure to a lot of folks listening out there, Robin. We're chatting with Robin Greenfield about his year-long quest to live off the land, foraging off the land, getting all his calories from the landscape, not even from gardens. RobinGreenfield.org is his website. So a couple things. You've got some kind of cool videos on there that points out that food is all around us. There's one video where you're literally foraging around the U.S. Capitol. Yeah. There's another one where you're foraging in Central Park in New York City. You know, you make the point there's food in our own backyards. Speak to that a little bit out there. What forage sources are available that we don't even know about? And this is probably kind of a bad time of year for it, right? I mean, let's face it. I mean, it is the dead of winter. There's not a lot of plants growing in this part of the world.
Yes, absolutely. The key to this abundance is you harvest spring, summer, fall, and you store that up for the winter. One of the most common questions is, how do you get through the winter? The answer is you harvest the abundance. Anyone who hunts and fishes and gardens knows that that's what you need to do. So there's not much foraging to be done right now at this moment, but there's fishing, there's hunting still, so that's harvesting. And I want to add one note. I write in depth about my take on veganism and eating meat in a more sustainable way on my website at robingreenfield.org/veganism. And also all the details about this tour are at robingreenfield.org/foraging-year. That's the page that has all the information about this. And what I'm showing is, my diet consists of, it will consist of about 200 different plants, mushrooms, as well as a small number of species of animals. So that's what I'm showing, is that food and medicine really is growing all over, in our backyards, our front yards, at our school lawns, on the streets, on the countryside, wherever you live, whether it's the North Woods, the desert, the ocean. There really, truly is so much food and medicine growing around us, and it's some of the most delicious and nutritious food on earth. And of course, it's free.
I want to emphasize, people need to know what they're doing. You've been doing this for years, especially when you start talking about mushrooms, right? Because a couple of bad mushrooms can kill you. I know on one of your foraging pages, you encourage folks to eat one new food per day so that if you do have any sort of allergic reaction to it, you know what it was. If you're eating two or three different things a day, it's hard to figure out what that is. It's important to go out with an experienced forager, isn't it? And how do you find those people?
Yeah, well, a great way to start foraging is to find a forager to go out with. I actually created the database, findaforager.com, which has over 500 foragers who teach all throughout the United States, many in Wisconsin and Minnesota. So that's a great resource to go out and find local people that you can learn from. We'll actually be at the Holiday Forest Fair on December 14th. Sam Thayer will be there, as well as many other foragers. That's a great place to connect with some foragers. And then there's Facebook groups that you can join in Wisconsin and Minnesota. My website at robingreenfield.org/foraging, that's a beginner guide to foraging that has everything you need to know, the best books for Wisconsin and Minnesota. And lastly, I'll say foraging is safe. And how it's safe is you just learn one new plant at a time. You don't have to learn all the poisonous plants to eat one plant. Dandelions. Everybody knows dandelions. Learn how you can enjoy dandelions and eat dandelions. You can make tea, a roasted root tea that everybody basically loves. You can eat the flowers, the leaves. It's not dangerous to try dandelions. And so you start with what's easy and you learn just one new plant at a time. And if you learn one plant per month for a year, that's 12 plants. And that's quite a bit to add to your diet of food that you've fished and hunt. And that can create a real, balanced, nutritious diet from the earth.
Again, you've got a great foraging guide for beginning foragers on your website, robingreenfield.org/foraging. A very extensive page, a lot of really good information there. I want to come back to the dandelion thing, though, and a term that I saw on your website that I really, really like, because I'm one of these guys that wants to exterminate all the invasive species. You and I might disagree on that. We don't need to go there if you don't want to. But we talk about omnivores, we talk about carnivores. You've got the term invasivevore, which to me, I love. Hey, man, if you can't beat them, eat them. And there's a ton of highly edible invasives out there.
Absolutely. There's a lot of people out there who say that foraging is inherently destructive to the earth. The reality is it couldn't be further from the truth. And a great place to start is with the plants that are considered invasive. These are plants that are out of ecosystem capacity. They're doing harm to the other plants in the area. And every time we eat them, we're actually doing an ecosystem service. So that's an excellent place to start.
And your website said garlic mustard is exhibit A, it sounds like.
Oh, garlic mustard is one of my favorite greens. And literally every time that we harvest it, we're doing a benefit. A lot of people spray it with pesticides. Well, I eat it and then I don't have to buy as much food from the grocery store. Well, right now, no food from the grocery store.
Again, you're swinging through the state next weekend. You're in northern Wisconsin as we speak. You got a bunch of events coming up. There's a lot of other information, features, some of your writing on your website. It's a very expansive website. And I appreciate you carving out some time. Good luck with the tour. And you know, maybe we'll check in with you. What, I guess it would be early next fall as this thing wraps up. You're confident you're going to pull it off, huh?
Oh, yes. I'm confident and I would look forward to having that conversation towards the end. I want to say thanks to the Minnesota Mycological Society. That's who's hosting my event on the 12th. Great group to get to know. And then lastly, I have a book that's available on a donation basis. It's called Food Freedom, and it's a guide to all of what we just talked about. And you can order it from my website, and you don't even have to pay. It's something that we share. So it's a great resource. I recommend.
Cool. Well, thanks a lot for joining us, the Pied Piper of foraging. Thanks for all you do, and good luck with this project and everything you got cooking, Robin.
All right. Thanks a bunch, Rob.
That was Robin Greenfield. Check out his website, robingreenfield.org. Let's grab a break. More of the broadcast after these messages.
Bigger than ever, the Wisconsin Ice Fishing Expo at the EAA Grounds in Oshkosh, December 12th through the 14th, has expanded. Now with a second building, new vendors, more room, and indoor food trucks. Easy parking with free shuttles, deals on shacks, lures, gear, electronics, expert seminars from Larry Smith, Tom Boley, Tommy Kimos, and others. Kids Fish Bingo, Trout Pond, Santa, and more. Kids 12 and under are free. Go to icefishexpo.com for info. Sponsored by Wisconsin Outdoor News, Ion, Eskimo, Acme, HT, and Thorn Brothers.
The journey to deer camp only comes once a year, and we know you've got plenty of heavy, bulky gear to pack. Introducing the new Diverge case from Plano. Lightweight where it counts, tough when it matters. Ultra durable and lightweight thanks to a tough shell exterior with high density foam that delivers molded protection without the bulk. And a drop zone lid tray provides a convenient workstation for keys, cartridges, and coffee during pre-hunt prep. The new Diverge series cases from Plano. Don't just kinda be ready, be Plano ready.
Whatever you're hunting, be it small game, predators, gobblers, or big game, Henry Repeating Arms has a rifle or shotgun you can trust. With over 200 models to choose from, every Henry is proudly made in Wisconsin, backed by a lifetime warranty and supported by top customer service. From the squirrel woods to deer camp, there's a Henry for your hunt. Order your free Henry catalog today at henryusa.com. You'll also get a sheet of decals, the Henry Repeater newsletter, and a personalized list of local dealers. That's henryusa.com. Get your free catalog today and gear up for the season.
You fish the same waters year after year. But what if your next best fishing story is just a few miles away? Onyx Fish builds on 15 years of experience, giving hunters and adventurers a revolutionary angling tool to help you find new water, new access, and new fish. Find the right lake. Know the species, size, and abundance. Get expert local insight. Navigate to the right ramp fast. Then go fish in new lakes like they're your home waters. Don't chase reports. Make your own with Onyx Fish.
Is a trip to Alaska on your bucket list? It's time to dump that bucket and buy your ticket. And while you're there, fish the Kenai River with Jason's Guide Service. Jason is considered the best when it comes to catching Alaskan salmon, rainbow trout, and char. He's one of only a few guides that has the permit to fish in the Kenai National Wildlife Refuge, where the salmon are easy targets and the trout and char are plentiful. So cross that Alaskan fishing trip off your list and check out jasonsguideservice.com. That's jasonsguideservice.com.
The Outdoor News Foundation is dedicated to nurturing the next generation of outdoor enthusiasts. Through your generous donations, we provide youth with access to OutdoorNews.com, educational scholarships, and grants. Every dollar donated goes directly to connecting young people with nature and outdoor activities. Help us cast a legacy for the next generation of outdoor enthusiasts and conservation leaders. Visit OutdoorNews.com to get involved, learn more, and donate today.
Everybody, welcome back. Outdoor News Radio, Rob Gerisline with you for another segment. Thanks so much for tuning in. Check us out online at outdoornews.com if you like the content here, or call us at 800-535-5191. Outdoor News makes a great holiday gift, so don't forget about that. Holiday season is upon us already. I am really excited to have my next guest join us. I know he's never been on this broadcast before, so I appreciate him carving out time. His name is Ryan Callahan. You'll probably hear me refer to him as Cal as the interview progresses. That's what everybody in the industry knows him as. He's been with the meateater.com for many years, but he is the new CEO and president of Missoula, Montana-based Backcountry Hunters and Anglers, a group we've talked about a lot on this broadcast over the years. And he's with us now. Cal, it's really good to see you. Thanks so much for joining us on the program.
Great seeing you, Rob. Yeah, I mean, I've known you and Outdoor News for a long time, longer than we should admit at this point.
Yeah. Well, you've been, you know, just an incredible member of the outdoor industry and the conservation community for well more than a decade. Let's talk a little bit about your background before we talk about the new position. The new position, you're going to formally start January 1st as the leader of Backcountry Hunters and Anglers. So the announcement came in late October. Just give listeners a little bit of background on yourself. How's a guy get into the outdoor industry and become a leader of such an important group?
Boy, I think like most people, I kind of got sucked in because there are ways to just spend time outside and work on the things that I really had a passion for, which was, you know, I had a good knowledge base of clothing from guiding fly fishing and growing up skiing and hunting and whitewater. And so a lot of diversity in what was in those markets. And then when I started working for First Light, which came through my guiding background, I was able to put a lot of those knowledge bases to a totally different use. And it was really reinvigorating. Also taught myself how to type at the same time. So that was useful. it was interesting to go from a seasonal employment background to all of a sudden kind of find out that people really valued and appreciated all that seasonal employment experience when they were trying to get outfitted for a trip, looking for exploring this tiny little brand. And then as years went on, Steven Ranella came on the scene and I was introduced to him through some friends in the conservation space. And he was kind of directed my way to take some first-time hunters hunting on his show, Meat Eater, which was brand new at the time. And and that was my first time working with Steve in that capacity, was taking Joe Rogan and Brian Callen on their very first ever hunting trip. So
were you a Montana resident? Were you from Montana originally, Cal?
Born and raised Montana kid. Yep.
Okay. And you still live in what, the Bozeman area?
Now I'm in the Bozeman area. Yeah.
So you're well known for your media work that you do with themeateater.com. You've got a very popular podcast, Cal of the Wild podcast. You're going to keep doing that podcast. I want to let folks know it's one I listen to periodically. Great content. You tackle topics that are, you know, I'm such a news hound, Cal, that I'm sometimes guilty of not including some of the fun stuff. But you do a lot of dog content. I see you had my friend Bob St. Pierre on recently. He is a big dog guy. You do some news. You got some crime on there. A lot of great content. I enjoy your podcast, and you're going to keep doing it. That's part of the deal, right?
It is. And I'm sure you can tell I get really passionate during legislative sessions, and that's coming up here too. And I think when the, you know, folks like the fun content, the crime, wildlife news, but I think they really get that return on investment when they start hearing about bills and legislation and regulation changes that affect them at the national level and at the state level. And I get one of the most fulfilling parts of that podcast is I get emails and messages every single week saying, oh my gosh, I'm so embarrassed. I've never written or called my state legislature and I did that today. And then you get real warm and fuzzies when somebody says, I testified in front of a committee, you know, and it's sure. Really amazing because we need to get this community as plugged in as possible, or else, you know, this stuff's on the bargaining table, the stuff that we love, the hunting, the fishing, the public access.
Cal, you've been part of a very successful media brand, a part of a number of successful brands like First Light. Why switch gears? Why jump over to BHA? Why is this important to you? Why was this an opportunity you felt like you had to take?
It's well-rounded. You know, when I was working on the First Light side of things, we used our brand voice and the for-profit position to say, hey, public lands, public wildlife, public water, access to those things. That's the only reason this business survives. And here's our employee base, and this is the ripple effect that we have in our economy. Same thing on the meat eater side. And I can take all that experience over to the nonprofit side and use that effectively there as well. But also, you know, the backcountry hunters and anglers community is just so amazing that I really couldn't say no to the opportunity to jump in with that community, grow it, especially at this time, because I'm just so passionate about the outdoors and it has given me so much. You know, I just firmly believe that America is what it is today because of these freedoms that we have. And we're at a kind of inflection point where folks need to be reminded of these amazing places and opportunities. And again, if we're not demanding that we keep them, they can go away. So
you listen to Outdoor News Radio. Rob Gerisline chatting with Ryan Cal Callahan. He's the new president and CEO of Missoula, Montana-based Backcountry Hunters and Anglers, really important conservation group out there on the national scene. He takes over the job officially on January 1st. Let's talk about Ryan's Callahan's management style or his public persona a little bit, maybe compared to a couple of the previous guys that have led BHA. Of course, Land was in charge. Land Tawney was in charge of the group for at least a decade. We had Patrick Berry in there for 18 months, two very different styles, I would say, with those two guys. Land, I would describe a bit of a fire and brimstone kind of guy. He's still at it with this other group he's got, American Hunters and Anglers. Do you fall somewhere in between? Is that how you describe yourself? Or have you thought that through yet, Cal?
Boy, I'm very mission-oriented. I have these goals in mind, right? And they're right on the masthead of BHA, public land, water, and wildlife. And that's an easy bellwether for me to follow. And I would say that it's easy for me to let my passion out and be loud. And there's times to do that. But so many people are just begging for that pragmatic voice and some level-headed pushback on the fact that the pendulum doesn't have to swing all the way one way and then all the way the other. There's so much room in the middle, especially when we talk about wildlife management and public lands management. These are renewable resources, but we know through history that managed poorly, they can be gone forever. And you don't have to sacrifice a lot of the things that get put on the table in front of us that say, well, you can have guns, but you can't have public lands. It's like, that's just not true. We can have both of those things. And I want both of those things, and I'll fight for both of those things, just as an example. So we can have, you know, responsible extraction. We can have public lands and healthy habitat. We just have to demand it.
Before we go to break, Cal, are you going to be moving to Missoula and working directly with the staff there, or is that just not necessary in this work remote era?
I'll definitely be spending more time in Missoula. That's where I grew up too. Okay. So it's very easy for me to zip over there, crash with aunts, uncles, good friends, and work in the office. But I don't have any immediate plans to be moving back to Missoula.
You'll join us again next week for another segment, Cal?
Yeah, yes, sir.
That is Ryan Cal Callahan, the new CEO and president of Montana-based Backcountry Hunters and Anglers. Appreciate him joining us for a segment this week, and we'll conclude our discussion with him on next week's program. For now, let's grab a break. More of the broadcast after these messages.
Calling all antique hunters, modern collectors, treasure seekers, and even that old guy on the couch with a smartphone. The Ducks Unlimited Vault Auction is live, and your chance to uncover your next legendary find is here. Whether it's a rare piece of DU history, a unique knife, an original work of art, or that one-of-a-kind firearm, this auction has over 1,000 unique treasures waiting for you. Start exploring now at www.intothevault.org. Bidding ends Saturday, December 7th. Don't underbid your most exciting relic to date.
Get ready for the ice season. MinFish's annual World's Greatest Online Ice Fishing Auction, sponsored by Charwire, runs November 26th through December 7th. To bid, go to mn-fish.com. That's mn-fish.com. Find gear from brands you trust: Clam, Ice Castle, Hummingbird, Garmin, and many others. Trips with top guides and vacation stays too. Proceeds support MinFish, giving anglers a strong voice in St. Paul.
If you're hunting deer in Minnesota or surrounding states this season, be aware that deer carcass movement restrictions are in place in Minnesota. You cannot move whole intact carcasses out of CWD management zones or into Minnesota from other states, and only certain parts of your harvest can be transported. If you're heading to a licensed taxidermist from hunting out of state or in a CWD zone, there are regulations for you too. Visit mndnr.gov/deer imports to learn more. That's mndnr.gov/deer imports.
Backcountry Hunters and Anglers, a nationwide group working to keep public lands in public hands so future generations can enjoy what we enjoy. Join the group that makes a difference. Check us out at backcountryhunters.org.
Are you ready to hit the frozen waters and reel in some epic catches? The all-new OutdoorNews.com is your ultimate resource for all things ice fishing. Whether you're a seasoned pro or just starting out, OutdoorNews.com is the source for the latest tips, techniques, and gear reviews. Stay ahead of the rest with the most up-to-date ice conditions, fishing reports, and hotspots to maximize your success. Don't miss out on this incredible opportunity to elevate your hard water game. Visit OutdoorNews.com today and become part of the ice angling revolution.
Whatever you're hunting, be it small game, predators, gobblers, or big game, Henry Repeating Arms has a rifle or shotgun you can trust. With over 200 models to choose from, every Henry is proudly made in Wisconsin, backed by a lifetime warranty and supported by top customer service. From the squirrel woods to deer camp, there's a Henry for your hunt. Order your free Henry catalog today at henryusa.com. You'll also get a sheet of decals, the Henry Repeater newsletter, and a personalized list of local dealers. That's henryusa.com. Get your free catalog today and gear up for the season.
Bigger than ever, the Wisconsin Ice Fishing Expo at the EAA Grounds in Oshkosh, December 12th through the 14th, is added a second building. New vendors and more room. Easy parking, deals on gear, seminars from experts, food trucks, and kids activities. IceFishExpo.com.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back. Outdoor News Radio. It is our final segment of this week's broadcast. I am Rob Jerisline. Thanks for tuning in. Great content at our website, outdoornews.com, where you can subscribe, get behind that paywall, or get the print version sent directly to your mailbox. Call us at 800-535-5191. And by the way, you get free digital access now with a print subscription, so you can get access to all of our content with that print subscription. Can't go wrong. It is St. Paul Ice Fishing Show weekend. I forgot to mention that earlier in the broadcast. I will be down at the show at least a couple times, and a gentleman who has spent a lot of time at that show over the years joins me now, Tim Lesmeister. Hey, Tim.
And I'll tell you what you're missing if you don't make it down to the show. It's the best show for ice fishing there is. There's no doubt about it.
In the country, yeah.
Everything there. But if you can't make it or you don't make it, I'm going to tell you what you're going to miss. Electric augers. There's going to be a lot of booths there this year, and they're all going to be touting their electric augers. They've finally gotten to the point where, with the big batteries having been condensed into smaller, they're easy to get around. They don't produce any smoke. You don't have to put gasoline in them, mix oil. And everyone loves the electric auger. And there's going to be a lot of them that they're going to be showing off down there. And if you're still using that old beat-up two-stroke gas-powered laser, then I'd say start seriously looking at the electric augers. You can drill a lot of holes. And it's gotten to the point now with ice fishing, you don't have to drill as many holes. Because, basically with GPS mapping, these sonar, forward-facing sonars, and, of course, underwater cameras, fewer holes, finding fish is much easier. Forward-facing sonar, speaking of that, there's going to be a lot of booths down there that are going to be showing off that. And if you have not seen how that functions well, check it out. And the float suits. You're going to see a lot of float suits down there, and the prices are right now. If you're not wearing a float suit out on the ice, well, you should be. Check them out. And a great place to do that is going to be at this show. If you can get down there yet, get down there. It's worth it.
Be sure to stop by the Outdoor News booth. Renew your subscription while you're down at the show. And yeah, Tim, I think forward-facing sonar units are going to be selling like hotcakes. Anyone who doesn't own one is going to be buying one this weekend at that show. We're getting some good ice putting together here. And so I think there's going to be a real good outlook for ice fishing this winter. Hey, one thing I did not mention last week, we talked a little bit about Mille Lacs. We talked about the perch. We talked about the walleye thing. They are also liberalizing the pike limit on Lake Mille Lacs. It's fish have got to be under 30 inches. They're trying to protect the big pike in there, but they have increased the limit from 3 to 5 on Mille Lacs. When I saw that, I thought, they legalized spearing up there. Are they taking a lot more big pike? And we got the hammer handle phenomenon going on Mille Lacs. I called the DNR. They said, no, that's not really the case. They are seeing the numbers of pike trending up, not to the point yet that they're a problem, but they want to encourage some more pike harvest up there.
And they can get away with that now. You know, in the evolution of northern pike on Mille Lacs is basically before nets got into the lake, the tribal nets have taken a lot of big, huge northern pike. So prior to that, it was a trophy pike fishery. And you could go up there and you could work musky baits up in the vegetation and catch huge northern pike. There weren't a lot of them, but there were enough to keep pike anglers very happy. And then they got up there with the nets and were actually taking a lot of big northerns in the nets. They dwindled that population of big pike out quickly. And now you've got a lot of northerns, not necessarily hammer handle pike, but you have a lot that are in that 18 to 26 inch range. And if they're going to up the limit on those, I say more power to them, because that's what you've got now. It's a totally different fishery. It can certainly handle any additional pike harvest, that's for sure.
The best predator for a small pike is a big pike. That's why you want to keep some of those big trophy pike in there and muskies, right? To pound some of those small pikes so that because they're eating machines, right? You get a lake full of hammer handle or even larger, as you say, the 18 to 26 inch, they eat a lot, and you want to protect the walleye and the perch fisheries that you got going in that remarkable lake right now. Tim, I had another item in my column. It was just real brief. There sure are a lot of reports about the economics of hunting and fishing and outdoor recreation. We had one state-specific a few weeks ago in Outdoor News. Then Spielman had a commentary this week. What a Southwick Associates, they're down in Florida, but they do a lot of these economic reports on kind of the overall hunting and fishing economy. That's in our commentary slot. And then I found yet another one that was specific to the economic impact of public lands. You know, these are important reports. It's important that people know, you know, just how important we are to the economy. I was joking with Spielman off air a little bit that maybe if we took some of this money we're putting into economic reports and bought some more wildlife management areas, we'd have even more people out there hunting and fishing.
I don't think people realize just how much of an economic impact the outdoors has, because it's not widely distributed through, you know, normal media outlets. And when you look at it, it's incredible. And we do so much as hunters and anglers to expand the opportunities for those that don't. It's something that should be touted more. I was reading one of the comments in your piece about how one aspect was the equivalent of how many Super Bowls?
The bullet point was that $351 million is added to the U.S. economy every day from recreation on federal lands and waters. That's the equivalent to hosting 8 Super Bowls per month in economic impact. So every day, hunters, anglers, other outdoor recreationists are adding more than $333 billion to the U.S. economy thanks to our public lands.
This is a driving force for a lot of individuals that just want to get outdoors. And I think that I see our population get more urbanized. I believe that we need to have more just so that we can provide opportunities for individuals to go see what it's truly like to be just in nature.
This is Outdoor News Radio. Rob Gerieslein and Tim Lesmeister are winding down this week's broadcast. We had a couple things related to CWD. Spielman and I talked the Minnesota-specific stuff earlier, but I had a gal named Katie Hill, a new freelance writer for Outdoor News, craft a piece on kind of what's going on nationwide with CWD. We haven't really reset on that point, on that topic in quite a while. I thought she did a good job with the piece. For a while there, Tim, it seemed like every month there was a new state, you know, being infected with CWD. That seems to have slowed down, in part because just about every place you have white-tailed deer, you now have CWD. It saturated a good chunk of the country. It was found in Georgia for the first time this year. That was the only state added to the list in 2025. I guess there were two or three states added last year, including Indiana and California. But we still have a lot of counties where it's being found, new counties, especially in this part of the world, right? Minnesota, Wisconsin, and other places. We're just kind of in for the long haul with this disease.
Yeah, and the gist of the article is basically it's not going to stop. We can't stop it. You might be able to slow it down by using certain methods, but it's going to expand out to a lot of areas where it's not right now. It's nothing you can do about that. But it is going to be wise, I think, for hunters to realize that it would be to their benefit to test their animals.
You know, it's real. You know, you hear people say things like, well, I never see these dead deer. Well, part of that is those are people who don't spend a lot of time in the woods. You talk to trout fishermen, Tim, they find a lot of dead deer, especially in the spring. As a CWD-infected deer reaches its latent stages, as it's getting close to dying, they have this just constant thirst. They spend a lot of time around water and streams. And so in the spring, trout fishermen find a lot of dead CWD deer because that's where some of these deer are congregating, especially in places like southwest Wisconsin. Very good friend of mine in southern Wisconsin shot his first CWD deer just a couple weeks ago, and he was telling me about it and how the organs were just in horrible condition. And he's got a science background, so he wore gloves and he wanted to, you know, gut it out just to kind of look at it. And he said it was just it was sad to see how emaciated it was.
We're going to see more and more of that. And I do believe that at some point hunters are going to say, you know what, I'm going to take the extra precaution and I'm going to buy the kit and I'm going to make sure that I get my deer tested because I need to know.
Hey, let's wrap up with a couple of fun little stories. One, everybody knows how I feel about free-ranging cats. So they've all been sending me the story from North Carolina. We had it in our Beyond Minnesota section this week of a motorist who said a bald eagle dropped a cat on his windshield. We've got a photo of what's left in the windshield. I guess, you know, in my opinion, if bald eagles are cleaning up a few free-ranging cats, that's all right by me.
Well, I'm guessing that the cat was probably fighting for its life because it was in the talons of a bald eagle. And I think the eagle just finally decided, you know what? I'm not going to mess with this cat. I'm just going to drop it and it'll hit the ground and I'll pick it up later as roadkill when the crows show me where it's at. And it turns out that he never could get back to the cat because it ended up taking a drive with somebody after it went through their windshield. And to be honest with you, there was no rescuing that cat. It was too far gone.
I think so, yeah. Tim, I wish we had more time to talk about this topic, but wild predators are making a comeback across a pretty good swath of Europe, wolves and even bears. And over there, they got, you know, the same kind of brown bears that we do here. I mean, they're a circumpolar species. I don't know. They don't seem quite as surly as our grizzly bears over here, but their population's rebounding in places like the Balkans, you know, around Greece, and causing a few problems.
Yeah, you know, they talk about the wolves making the big comebacks, but the bears are too. And anybody that has livestock or pets, they're having to deal with some real problems with predation over there with bears now and big brown bears. So, those populations expand, the people are going to get a lot more nervous about them being, and they're entering a lot of highly populated areas, which are scaring a lot of people.
It's an interesting topic. Who knew that Europe would ever actually have big predator populations again? But like I say, we'll talk about that more in another week. Tim, thanks a lot for joining me. You have a good week ahead, buddy.
All right, we'll catch up to you soon.
Tim Lesmeister, appreciate him joining us. Everybody, have a great week out of doors. I'm Rob Gerieslein signing off for Outdoor News Radio. Missed a segment from this week's edition of Outdoor News Radio? You can hear a podcast of the complete program at OutdoorNews.com or via your favorite podcast streaming platforms. And for the rest of the story on the topics we cover here on the program, get yourself or a friend a subscription to Outdoor News. Just visit OutdoorNews.com. And don't forget to join us next week on this station to talk everything out of doors.